Hey guys, before we dive into the show, I wanted to tell you about my new trailer music toolkit, which is 100% free and you can download it right now over at richardprin.com/toolkit. This toolkit contains, firstly, my perfect trailer cue blueprint. It also contains a handful of one-shot samples, like huge trailer hits, pings, plucks, Brahms, booms, transitions, and downers. Perfect for beginners, pros, and everything in between. Okay, let's get into the episode.
One man. One microphone. And one medium-sized coffee. Welcome to the Trailer Music Composers Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Trailer Music Composers Podcast. Today I have an episode of the Ask Rich, which is when a listener records a message asking me a question that they want me to answer. And this week we have Rob with a couple of questions. Take it away, Rob.
Hi Rich, it's Rob from Newcastle. Hope you're keeping well. A couple of questions, if that's all right. First question is sound design. Just wondering what you're using to get your synthetic, sort of in-the-box style sound design sounds at the minute. I'm hearing some really, really cool synthetic sounds and just wondered what you were doing with that. Also panning. I was wondering around in regards to string quartets, if you're still sticking to your strict panning of putting the violins over the left, for example. The reason I ask is I'm hearing some tracks at the minute where the instruments are moving around and I'm hearing sort of featured parts with the violin in the centre, and then when they're part of the quartet, they move over to the left, for example. So just to see if you're still doing your what you're teaching on the course or if you've changed your methods, that would be excellent here. Thanks very much. Loving the show. Keep up the great work. Thanks again.
Okay, so in answer to your first question about synthetic sound design, so I'm still a bit of an old person when it comes to that. You know, I say old person, I don't mean that. I mean, I'm still stuck in my ways of using the same synths that I have always used because I know and love them, and that is Omnisphere primarily. And I do tend to use... what's it called? I've forgotten the name of it now. Gonna have to look it up. One of the native instruments ones, Reactor. There we go. Reactor. I like Reactor too. And there's the other one as well, which I know you're all screaming at me. It's called the Finger, but it's Reactor Contact. It'll come to me. But to be honest with you, dude, like when it comes to synthetic stuff, I usually try and keep it as simple as possible, and use layers as well. I'm not, as I'm sure all of you know by now, I'm not a huge like synth nerd, so I don't like dive in deep onto the synths. I basically go, what have you got for me right now out of the box? And if it's great, then I'll use that and sort of add my own manipulations. But for me, most of the magic of synthetic stuff, sounding real professional here, most of the magic of the synthetic sound design, the electronic sound design I would often refer to it as, is done after you've found the source sound, which is much the same with the organic sound design. You know, you record a cello and then you do the magic afterwards. So I mean, you will usually go, well, okay, what type of sound do I want? Do I want it to be like spiky or smooth? So I'll go sawtooth or sine, you know, and I'll kind of, or distortion, and then I'll think about that and I'll take that and then I'll start chopping, bending, pitching, you know, all sorts of stuff, which is done in the door, so in Logic Pro for me. And my favorite way to do that is usually to find a source sound, bounce it in place, and then have that as like the root, as it were. Bounce it in place again, and then pitch it. Bounce that in place again, and then chop it. Bounce that in place again, and then you'll get this kind of like progression of sounds from one single sound. And by doing that, you create this kind of great arsenal from a single source sound, which is a great thing when you're working on a single track, when you can say, you take a signature sound, for example, which could be a saxophone. And you do all that magic where you just shove it, push it, bend it, snap it, you know, whatever it is that you do with it, each time bouncing a new copy. And then you all of a sudden you have this arsenal of stuff that kind of sounds like it's from the same sound world. And it's really fantastic, really simple way to keep sort of homogeny within your tracks. So there's this like feeling that the sound, the signature sound and the electronic sounds are kind of the same world. And you still just, I mean, to be quite honest with you, like you can't beat something like an Arturia CS80 for pulses and like eerie wobbly pads and things like that. So but that is my approach to sound design across the board, electronic or organic. I will take the source sound and mess with it. So to be honest, it's kind of like, what do I do with synth sound still? I know, not synth sound, sound design. I know there are a lot of people who are absolute magicians with synths. And I'd love to say I am one of those people that wears those hats. But my favorite thing is the creative mushing of sounds to create your own sound palette. Now, regarding the second question about string panning. Now, this is one of those subjects, isn't it, where I remember the first time I released my courses, I got so many comments from people saying, but the panning's already baked in. And even on the interview I did with Joel Dallier not that long ago, he talks about not panning. And it's one of those discussions slash arguments slash talking points that will keep coming. There is no hard and fast rule. I do generally try to pan my instruments, except the bass, violin one, violin two, viola and cello. I do try and pan them as if they are a quartet or a string ensemble in front of me. I will keep the bass mostly center to ground everything. And you're right, there is a tendency to move things around when recording. And that is just because of the weight, the kind of sonic weight that's carried, you know. If it kind of stops, does a stop down in a trailer and the violin one is doing some wonderful signature sound and it's panned hard left, it's going to seem a bit weird if you're sat in a cinema when you're like, oh, the violin's over there. So it kind of makes sense for you to think of it in terms of that, you know. If the part they're playing is a featured element, then it does make sense to move it. And I do that. And sometimes I keep everything center. You know, as I'm sure you're aware, I do like mono. And I often will record my strings in mono and have them center. So it really is a creative choice. I do like to kind of think of it in terms of hard left, soft left, soft right, hard right. I do like to think of it like that, like the political spectrum. But, you know, obviously I wouldn't say the hard right is a cello. But anyway, I do try and think of it in that terms, just as a kind of a clear starting point. Because what you'll find when you stick to this panning system is you then have to start, you have to think about your arrangements and your voicings a bit more. Because sometimes you'll notice that when everything's panned in this way, you go, oh, it's sounding a bit flat. And that could be your arrangement. It could be your voicings. So have a mess around with that and see what you can do. So when you're in that situation, it is good. That is my default, to have them panned in that way, as if you are sat in the audience, not sat behind the players. Because also I like the feeling of the spread it gives. It creates this lovely space. And I do quite like it when you have the parts moving around in the stereo field. But it's a creative choice. Always a creative choice. All of the things we do are creative choices that we have to make. And there isn't like, especially with trailer music, there isn't a hard and fast rule about a lot of things. Structure and the way we build our structure in trailer music is probably the only hard and fast rule. And even that sometimes gets broken. I mean, that's the nice thing about trailer music. It's like, here's your time. Here are your acts. Go. Ooh, it's got to feel happy. What do I do? You know? So when it comes to the panning of the strings, don't worry about it too much. If it's easier for you to default to panning, great. If you're a bit concerned about, well, they're already baked in with their panning, just leave it. If it sounds good, it sounds good, you know. And that's the thing with teaching. When you're teaching a subject like this, sometimes it's very unhelpful for the teacher to be like, hey, if you think it sounds great, just go with it. Because sometimes people haven't attuned their ear to what they like and what they don't like. So sometimes as a teacher, you have to take a stance and you go, no. For instance, one of my stances that I know causes a lot of anger in the community is I don't care if my tracks are peaking when I'm composing. I'm not sat there going, oh, I haven't got enough headroom. Oh, I haven't got this. Because I want people to start focusing more on the writing better music than making that music sound better produced. Because I'm sure you've, I know you know that a better produced track does sound good. But if it's not written well, structured well, it doesn't matter. Whereas if you hear a track that's written well, structured well, and like has a bit of, you know, fluffy low end. I love all the sort of things we say as composers, my fluffy low end. If it has a bit of a fluffy low end, we're not going to be like, well, that's a rubbish track. We'll be like, oh, fine, we'll get someone in to mix that. You know, it's just that simple. Whereas as a composer, if you send off a track that's well produced but isn't well written, you go, well, it's not quite there yet. You know, and I know you know it. It's like the difference between, so you imagine you strip back a load of pop songs to a guitar and a voice. You can hear a great song when they're just stripped back to their most basic elements. It doesn't matter about their snazzy production and how hard their kick is hitting. It doesn't matter about how much their bass makes you poo yourself. What is important is the songwriting. And for us as composers, what is important is capturing the mood and the structure properly. If you have to pan your strings to get the effect you want, do that. I teach that as a way to kind of give people a foundation to work on. Because if they were ever to record, they will probably have the strings sitting in that place. And if you say to the string players, can you move around? They all go, oh no, what's happening? You know, or they'll start to get the giggles because it's funny. It's like, whoo, this is different. And that happens sometimes. And I've done that and it's really fun and, you know, it gets a new energy. But it's a foundation. If you want to shove everything down the middle, have it mono, and then have all your synths dancing around the left and the right, do that. If that's what does the trick for your track. I like to keep it simple when it comes to this. I like to, because I don't have to think about it. I just be like, yep, yeah, left, left, right, right, done. I was almost a paradiddle. Left, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, left, right, left, left, left. It's hard to say. It's harder to say than it is to play, although. Anyway, I'm going down one of my many rabbit holes because this is one of those things where I just have to say, Rob, go with what works best for your track. I will more often than not still stick to the stereo spread as if they are playing in front of me and occasionally move them. But sometimes that is done in the trailer edit without me anyway. So, if you imagine, again, we're going back to that good track, bad track, sorry, good track, badly produced, bad track, well produced. The good track, badly produced, they might just make it sound better anyway. I mean, the amount of times we've sent a track off and it's landed on a trailer and I've gone, holy smokes, what have they done to my track? I love it. Like the editor has done some wonderful magic that I couldn't possibly think of, especially with that edit. And when it's a bad track, well produced, it's a case of like literally chopping the track up and rewriting it, which is a lot more time consuming. Well, I think it is anyway. Because then you have to reproduce it anyway. Right, I think I've answered your questions adequately. And I, for those of you listening, Rob's talking about my courses where I talk about arranging for writing for strings and orchestra, and I talk about the modern orchestral layout that we have, and how that's how we position our tracks. It gives our tracks a bit of space. It allows us to understand where they sit in the stereo field and how to kind of balance their parts, their musical parts. Those. And that's what I teach in my courses. Sometimes you'll see me diverge from that. But in my kind of foundation courses, like the Trelly Music course or Trelly Music for Beginners, it's just a case of just showing you the kind of like, this is what you can do to start with. So have some fun with panning. Chuck the violins to the right, see if anyone notices. In fact, chuck everything to the right, see if anyone notices. They probably will, because they'll be like, well, I have no strings on the left. It's kind of like when I used to listen to Weezer on headphones. They'd have guitar one and guitar two panned left and right. So me and my friend would sit there with one earphone each, and I'd be like, oh, I've never heard the guitar one like this. It sounds weird. Where's guitar two? You know, it's just about the balance that you want to strike with your track. Right. As per usual, guys, thanks for listening. And I do want to kind of hammer home a couple of points about like looking after yourselves. I did the Quiet Panic episode a couple of weeks back, and I do mention it, you know, looking after yourself and your, I don't want to say mental health because it's got such a stigma to it, but I do mean that, like looking after yourself, like giving yourself time to have fun, taking breaks. I'm not saying like take a break every hour for 15 minutes. I'm saying take a break so that you can come back to your track renewed and refreshed, so that you can come back and say, actually, I want the strings to be panned left. You can hear it better. Your ears need the break. Your mind needs the break. Your body needs the break. Look after yourselves and each other. Hey, what's that from? Anyway, thanks, guys. You're absolute legends for listening, and I will see you in the next episode. Toodle-pip.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for listening. I have something really, really exciting to offer you. I've put all 12 of my trailer music courses into a bundle called the Ultimate Trailer Music Bundle, and I've put it on for a very, very special offer. Head on over to richardprin.com/trailer music bundle to get your hands on this awesome deal.